Session number 10444, Monsieur Robert Bob Meloubier, Part 1.
Could you tell me first of all something about where you were born and your family?
Yes, I was born in Neuilly-sur-Seine, which is a suburbs of Paris, in 1923, but my family came from the United States. Well, they were French, actually, but my father and mother left France, I think, in 1900. And they were professors at a college called Adelphi College in New York City. And they spent about 20 years in the States. And my brother was born in the United States and actually is an American citizen. And he lives in the United States. He's married with the Indiana girl. And this part of the family is purely American. And I'm French in between because my wife is half Russian. So I stand just in between the France, Russia, and the United States.
But you're now a French citizen.
I've always been a French citizen personally. My brother is American. This part of the family is American, but I'm actually French. And I've always been.
But your English obviously is very fluent, but French is your mother tongue.
French is my mother tongue. My English is fluent, but it's less fluent than it used to be before, about some years back.
And what education did you have?
Nothing.
Was there
High
not?
school, that's all. I mean, as I can say, I can read and write, but no degrees whatsoever because I left Paris in 1940. I was 17. Well, just what we call in French, en première, which is what the American 12th grade is it? Yes, or 13th, 12th grade right now, I think. Well, and then I left college by the time of high school, and that was it.
And your education was wholly in France.
In France, actually, yes, in Paris.
What job did you take up?
No job. Put me right after at 17. Well, then, it was the French collapse by that time. So I escaped from Paris, went to the southwest of France, Saint-Jean-de-Luz. Actually, I missed the Polish cargo ships, which were leaving from Saint-Jean-de-Luz, and part of the French, which were with me, actually managed to get to England. And in June, which is the 20th of June, 1940, and we've met since. So they went usually through either the Royal Air Force and or Libya if they were in the army or the Air Force. And actually, I flew to Marseille, and then from there to Bizerta, to Tunisia, then Algiers, Gibraltar, England, and SOE. So my career was a military career from 1940 until 1956. And then after that, I joined the oil company, which was Shell, and then Elf, which is the French National Oil Company. And I spent about being what I call an oil man for about 22 years after.
How were you actually recruited to SOE? Can you tell me?
Yes, definitely. Well, I escaped from Bizerta, which was I was a soldier by that time. I was in the Air Force, but private in the Air Force anyway. And I escaped from Bizerta, actually on the 8th of November, 1942. I mean, the Allied landed in Algiers and Morocco. And the Germans landed in Bizerta. I was there on the Air Force base. So before they sort of surrounded the base, I managed to escape on a bicycle through the German lines, and I bicycled as far as a place called Lacal, which is one of the first small towns on the Algerian-Tunisian border right now. And I met the British there. And then they took me to Beaune. And Beaune was very much bombed by that was the first strafing and bombing by Messerschmitt 109 and Messerschmitt 110, which were actually stationed for about a few days in Bizerta. So the British column, there were so many wounded and dead. I was there under the bombing too. And I managed assisted the officers who couldn't speak French because I was there taking the wonders to clinics and hospital and translating whatever they could say because they didn't speak a word of French. So very kindly they gave me a pass to go to Algiers by train because by that time they could give me a pass. And I went to Algiers and I was actually, I lived at Lycée Bugeaud, which was a sort of depot for British, mostly naval personnel, merchant navy, and some of the servicemen from the Air Force, not regularly in regular units. And I said, and then I got recruited by a unit called the Special Detachment, which was organized, subversive, by the British. You know that by that time, I mean, although the Allied landed in Algeria, nothing was changed with the actual government and the people in charge, which were by that time Darlan, Châtel, Nogues, which were Vichy people. Which means even that the chaps who had helped assisted with the landing, I mean the subversive réseau, French réseau there, some of them were still in jail, I mean, and nobody could actually take them out of jail. Because there was this understanding between Roosevelt and Churchill saying, whatever we do, we don't get involved in French politics when we land. And our business is a military operation, not a political one. Although Churchill would have liked to bring de Gaulle with him. I mean, Roosevelt didn't want it. He hated de Gaulle anyway. So what happened? Well, people were in the statu quo. I mean, the Pétain's photographs all over the walls and in the windows, and the Vichy people in charge. And actually, the pro-Allied people were living undercover. Otherwise, they went to jail. So what happened to the British? That was the way they did it, anyway. Started a small special detachment, which were actually grouping the people who helped with the landing. And they started sort of camp in a farm in Cap Matifou, which is east of Algiers. And they were provided with British uniforms, 10 guns, weapons and all this, but this was secret. And one way or another, I got in touch with one of these people. I said, what are you doing? I said, well, I just escaped from Bizerta, but I can't go to England because anyway, they've got Vichy people all over the place. He said, join us. This is what I did. Now, once I was there, I met a friend of mine. His name was Fernand Bonnier de la Chapelle, who was in a college which is called Saint-Croix Collège Neuilly. I was at the Lycée Pasteur when I was younger, and we knew each other. And so we were friends already, and we were together with some young people, former students, low students from France who just escaped under the Jeunesse detachment, you know. And this year, Vernon Bonnier La Chapelle shot Darlan on the 24th of December 1942. So on the, he was shot himself on the 26th. And from there on, we had the Vichy police on our tails, so we had to escape one way or another. And what happened before with the special detachment, you had gentlemen from the intelligence corps, such as Major Jacques de Gillis, who was sort of having a look on how he could probably recruit some of these young people who came from France or Tunisia or Algeria. For SOE, because SOE was craving for people who could speak French and would be volunteer to jump into France. And he, what he did by that time, he played the part of an instructor in an armed combat. He used to come to the farm from time to time and teach us and talk to us, but teach us an armed combat and jiu-jitsu with the sergeant major, you know. So when this happened, I mean, we knew where was the villa of the intelligence corps, where de Gillis was. So we went up to de Gillis and said, now, we've got the police on our tails. What can you do? He said, I'll take you to England. This is how it happened. So he took us on the 10th of January. The 10th of January, yes. Where he boarded a small corvette to Gibraltar. From Gibraltar to London. This is how it happened.
And there you had more training?
Oh, yes, I had more training. We got there from February to August, I mean, I went all through the the Soyuz course, which means an encampment and shooting and sabotage and parachuting and so on, so on. Security at Beaulieu, near Southampton, and so on, so on. Well, the usualty.
What did you think to that training? What did you think to the quality of the training?
Well, we didn't know a thing about anything, so to us it was good. It was good.
And with the benefit of hindsight, do you think it was good?
Yes, I think so. I think so. Yes, we needed it anyway. We didn't know about anything. So there was just a question of training agents before they jumped in the field.
Do you think there were any weaknesses in the training?
From now on, yes, I know.
Such as?
Well, security, well, the matter of security was a bit childish, I should say, by that time. But we didn't know it when we got into France. I mean, but not especially the training. Well, training is what it is anyway. You'll pick up whatever you want in training. Once in the field, I mean, it's your own business to keep alive. What I should say, rather, with the identity papers, which were not the right color. We knew it from the beginning, but we discovered it in the field. I mean, the Russian cars were not exactly the correct color. The driving license, identity cards and all this, and especially, which was incredible, I jumped into France in August 1943 with people in London saying, well, they have nothing to eat anyway, you've got to take food with you. So we took chocolates, I took all sort of tins, which are supposed to be French preserves, you know, with no labels, nothing on it. And then chocolate in anonymous
wrappings
in blue paper, and cigarettes, which were supposed to be French cigarettes, anonymous wrappings in blue too, which were made out of cigars, bits and pieces, you know. And this, of course, if we were caught by, if they had been caught by any normal checkup, and that would have been awful, because obviously that couldn't be French. So we were stuffed with this. I had a full suitcase of these chocolate cigarettes and tins.
Can you remember any of the personalities whom you were with in the training, either people being trained or people who were training you? Any personalities stand out in your mind?
Well, Major Sykes.
Why him in particular?
Because he was, in charge of... one of the prominent policemen in Shanghai before the war. He was the one, I think, who established this fast shooting technique, British technique, that was Sykes. Now, who was it? Was it Colonel Reeves? Was it Reeves who was the head of the Board of Electricity? Who was in charge of station industrial demolition, which was station 17, which was Hatford, near Oxford, for instance. He knew his business, definitely, and Sykes too, for instance.
What about the people you were being trained with? What kind of people were there? All kinds? All different kinds of people?
Yes, but we were in small groups. We started in the Wanborough Manor, you know, near Guildford in 1943, which is STS number 5. And the man in charge was Major Watt, I remember since. And then I was by that time with Tessier, English second lieutenant, who got killed later, a very nice chap who speaks first-class French. And I was with William Plouman, who was killed. And Dinah Rowden, who was killed too. Pierre Reynaud was still alive. It's the same one. We came together from Algiers together. We met in Algiers and we came together. We're still alive right now. Pierre is probably the only one who's left now. I don't know if there are any other of these 21 or 22 chaps. And the two ladies, I think, are still alive, adopted. I don't know, still there.
How apprehensive were you about going into France?
Well, I was 20 by that time. I wasn't apprehensive at all. I don't suppose anyone was apprehensive. I was with this sea because I wanted to join the RAF. I wanted to be a pilot since I was a small boy. So when I asked Jacques de Gillis, who became my friend lately, I said, I'd like to say later. I mean, we don't need any pilots. That's none of my business. It's not my cup of tea. Now, anyway, please, you just go to the field once, maybe for 6 months. Later on, you can join the RAF once you finish with whatever job we have, sort of repay us for whatever we do in taking you out of Algeria. This is it.
Did you have many false attempts to get into France? Any last-minute call-offs of the
Oh, yeah, I think I have two or three, yes. I was on standby in, I think, in July, the whole July moon, which is about 14 days, and then I jumped on the 15th or 16th of August, which was by that time the last day, or last full night, full moon night of in August 1943. So I think I had at least two trips over Normandy. And then before, anyway, I'd been the buckmaster and the conducting officers. Two or three different missions, we didn't work. You know what happened? You say, well, what do you want? Well, we planned you could go to, for instance, I don't think they did want to take me to somewhere, Dijon or Lyon or whatever it is. You know what happened? And so they start talking the matter over with me, and within a week or 2 weeks, they say, okay, well, sorry, it's cancelled. Because in 1943, lots of organizations been actually destroyed by the Germans. Lots of people were arrested. You know, it was the bad days starting, I think, from the end of 1942 until 1943. Well, that was the same. Everyone was in the same boat, I should say. And I know that some of my friends too. They had were supposed to go. They used to go to Thamesford, and then they went away for about 2, 3, 4 days and came back and said, okay, we didn't do it. Of course, we weren't allowed, and nobody spoke about this, but you know that one friend left anyway. He was leaving to the field, and he came back about a week after and said, that's me again. It didn't work. That's what happened with me, anyways.
Now, when you went in August 1943, what identity did you go in with?
Well, I took an identity, my Mollier, M-O-L-L-E-R. Which are selected, but of course Robert, because we didn't change the, if possible, we didn't change the initials, never. We kept the same initials, I mean, Christian name and surname.
And who was this man supposed to be? What job and so on did he do?
Sort of publicity, working in the publicity business, you know, advertising and all this and all that, which is very vague, very vague.
And you were supposed to go into the Rouen area?
Well, yeah, yes.
And what did you know about the group you were supposed to contact?
Practically nothing. I knew that the chap in charge was a gentleman called Staunton. And this his alias was, the code name of the organization, the RISO, was Salesman. That's all I knew. I was supposed to be his assistant, mostly to train people in sabotage. That was it. And maybe do some work as a saboteur myself. This is what I knew, and he was waiting for me in the field. And actually, I had two or three trips before, badly shaken by storms, especially, and by that time over Normandy onto the Channel. So I flew over several times, and then once it was good, the weather was fine, and the reception committee was on the ground, which was Philip Lievert, Staunton himself.
Can you describe how you were received by them?
Oh, yes, very good, yes. Lovely, gorgeous weather. The three, you know, the three torch lights on the ground. And then I jump, nice, mild, in August especially. Just landed. Happily, and this chap came and said, okay, well, that's you? I said, yes, that's me. Okay, join me. And then we went to a nearby farm, and myself with my empty packages, you know, full of chocolate and cereals and all this. And this farm was lit. It was 1 o'clock in the morning inside, you know, but it was right in the countryside, far away from Louviers. And there was a huge table, and there were ladies cooking all over the place. And you have everything you can think of. Patty, hams, heaps of butter, bread, wine, cider, everything on the tip of your mind. And I'm bringing chocolate and cigarettes and prison because I was going to starve. Of course, by that time in the countryside, people had too much to eat because the transportation didn't work. And they couldn't just export what they had. So, food. I think I feared for my liver and my stomach when I was in Normandy. You know, it was incredible what people could eat at that time. I lost openly. And then I think we slept for about 2 or 3 hours after this huge meal. And of course I couldn't refuse because usually people would say, I mean, you come from England. We know that there are restrictions in England. I mean, please, I know what you do too. I haven't been eating properly for so long time now. I could, please, we're going to feed you now. That was the other way around. That was very good. And I ate lots of pâté and oysters and everything, my goodness. And cider. And I went to bed while in a small room at about 2 o'clock in the morning. I went 2 or 3. I slept for about 2 hours and then we left by lorry in Gasogene, you know, the gas tower, the charcoal one. And at about 5 o'clock, just when the curfew was lifted, we got with the containers and everything behind, and Staunton and the French driver and myself down to Rouen. We got to Rouen, to a garage, which was actually a sort of depot for the réseau. And we stored everything, we stored whatever I brought in, which were in the containers with a new radio set and a few brand guns and Sten guns and plastic explosive and everything. Plus money, as we did usually.
What impression did you get about the security of the réseau?
Well, I was a bit shaken, you know. There were so many Germans, especially in Rouen, you know, Rouen, the rear base of not Rommel's, but yes, it was Rommel by that time. I mean, the defense forces, German defense forces against the landings, which was going to take place somewhere, they expected. It was so crowded with Germans. I mean, I was really upset. I was really uncomfortable. And this is what Charles told me. I mean, you get used to it. You'll get used to it. I mean, first thing, you don't do anything. You stroll around Rouen until you get used to the green, the green uniforms of the Wehrmacht. And then later on, you work. So this is what I did. I did, but incredible. I mean, they introduced me to a chap who was the owner of a small cafe on the Seine River, you know, in Rouen. And then he had a villa uphill. What was the place? I don't remember what the name of the district for anyway. And I've lived there. I spent one night there. And then after that, Staunton told me, I mean, you'd better go to a cinema and see what's going on, because in the cinema you didn't have any TV by that time. So in cinema you have the news, you know, the newsreels. And but I came back at about before curfew, which was 10 o'clock. All this by bicycle, of course. I was given a bicycle. This is the first weapon you always got when you got into the field. Bicycle, so that you could drive up, ride up and down. And I knocked at the door, and no one answered. So I was right in the street. I knocked, I rang, I did everything. So I jumped over the fence, got into the living room of this villa with no one, and someone, the lady of the house, whom I've met the day before, got out the chimney. See, I'm hiding because my husband's been arrested by the Gestapo this afternoon. So what you could do, you'd better leave tomorrow morning. Well, that was security. I said, I'm not going to leave tomorrow morning. I'm going to leave right now. I said, no German came. I said, no German came so far, but I don't know what to do. And they had with them one of the nephews, I think, who was réfractaire, you know, the STO, travail obligatoire. He was there, and they said, well, this gentleman, this guy and myself would better leave right now, because if the Gestapo comes, they'll come at 3 o'clock in the morning. Or they'll come as usual, I've been told that, before 5 in the morning. And leaving a house by dawn is too late. We'll get caught before, if they come up. So I took my suitcases with my chocolate and my preserves and my damn cigarettes and all this, and we started trolling in the streets of Rouen, of this district of Rouen, after curfew. which means he's listening to the patrols coming on and down, and actually managed to go to the charwoman of the an old lady has been cleaning the house, you know. She had a very small house, and she welcomed us, and we slept there on the floor. And then, after a while, Staunton got in touch with these people. I mean, he sort of watched what happened. Actually, the chap's been caught for, he's been arrested for a black market and not subversive actions. Just because, of course, being having a coffee shop on the on the Seine, anyway, of course, he was dealing with butter and whatever it is, and meat and potatoes and all this, what every Frenchman used to do by that time. So anyway, I changed my home. I went to another home, and then I started working. Actually, this was a false alert.
Can you describe the work that you actually did?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, I started anyway with training people all over Normandy, small groups in farms in districts, and training them with using how to make charges, explosive plastic charges, bombs, and using pistols and using Sten guns, and being able to gather information for the about factories, plants, power station, and all this and all that, and give them as much as possible some tell them about security, which is very difficult when you get from England and you get into the field to these people. I mean, we lived in their own environment, and they say, we have nothing to fear, we always lived there. This is what I did, and I just did for about, and this that for about September until November.
And then what?
Well, we had two targets to destroy. One was the power station, one power station, which is a huge power station, which was built on the bank of the Seine, of course. And it's been actually raided two or three times by the RAF, but unfortunately it's by the foot of a huge hill near Cantleu, and the weather in Rouen was so bad that they couldn't, the mosquitoes couldn't hit it at all. So the first time what I had to do, a rather funny thing, I had to spread around the power station, which was built